Welcome to the podcast, Amarpreet. And I wanted to just start with a simple thing. And you are in AI for a long time, more than 20, I think nearly 25 years. And that is really a long time because now everybody talks about AI. Before, basically, nobody talked about it. Why did you focus on that? I mean, you could have focused on more fashionable topics, but you focused on a niche. What did move you to there?
So it's interesting that, well, first of all, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me on your podcast. I think it's a great topic. The audience you have, we'll try to make this really useful, insightful. Funny thing is, this is not the first coming of AI. In many ways, this is, I would say, third, or you could say even fourth. And it'll be surprising, you know, especially for the younger generation. But AI was a thing, you know, back in 90s, late 90s. So I was still in college, had a general introduction to AI as a topic. I think the professor was a great professor. You know, he had a very interesting way of teaching it. And that got me interested. I was always a technology nut, so to speak. I've always thought that's the best way to really help us progress faster, right? As people, as human race, if you will. And it was a little bit of a thing. It was a very interesting topic. And that's how, in 1998, I got fascinated with AI and sort of started my AI journey at that point of time.
It's interesting how some people move you or touch you, and they take you with them on the journey. Absolutely. I know myself. Yeah.
All about people.
Yeah. This is like, what was the wave then in 98? Was Google, was all the search AI, or what was then?
No, not really. So, the first wave of AI probably was 70s or maybe 60s. It was slightly different set of technologies. Back in late 90s, I think neural networks had become a hot thing, if I remember right. It's been a while ago. So neural networks now, as we know, that it's neural networks then kept evolving, you know, over a long time. I would say 2000s was a dud, more or less, you know, not fully, but there was a lot of stuff happening. Then the, what I call the third coming of AI, right? First being 60s, 70s, then 90s, and third one was around 2015. Again, many people would probably just think AI is a 2021, 22, you know, ChatGPT thing. 2013, I think there was a breakthrough, technologically speaking, with neural networks. What's called, essentially, how can you understand images? You know, it's called ImageNet. There was a competition. It was the kind of a neural network that managed to solve that problem. And then there was a steady progress of AI from 2013, I would say, up to 2017-18. Again, I'm going into a bit of AI history here, but that's easy enough. I think 2017 was the what is called the transformer architecture technically, which is basically the whole Gen AI the way it is right now. There was some Gen AI in the neural networks world too. But the new approach, which really was a breakthrough, the paper, I think, was published in 17 or 18. 2018, 19, a lot of many companies, teams started working. Team at Google, OpenAI started back then, as you know. And the breakthrough finally came in, 2022, let's just say. So that's a bit of history. And 2000s was a bit of a dud. But then 2013 onwards, it picked up again. And then it just blew up in 22.
Yeah, for most people, it's really a new thing. So it's interesting to hear, even if, people knew, they don't know, but they use AI for many things already. But now I think it's a quality change. For you, actually talking about you a little more here, I went to your website and looked at your list of employees, and you're the last one there. That is a little untypical. You could be the first one, but does it say something about you? Was it a coincidence or?
Yeah, I suppose it's a, perhaps it, you know, so I think it's easy enough to, put yourself as the first person. In many ways, you have to act. For example, you know, for this podcast, you know, I'll be from the team who will be represented, right, as someone leading it. But in a way, I suppose we like to believe that, you know, leaders don't come first, you know, leaders come last. It's the team that builds it. So probably a little bit of that thought is what you see reflected on that page, yeah.
Oh, that's great, because I had the thought, he's a humble guy that doesn't present himself.
I try. Yeah.
Not dancing in videos also. I'll put it in a show notes.
That's not me, actually.
No, exactly.
Confused, but that's not me. There was someone else who did a fantastic job of, you know, creating our product, you know, video as a rap video, I suppose that's what you're referring to, yeah.
Yeah, that was funny. I first thought that's strange, but then I more and more laughed it, because I mean that's a sales situation you have. That, like I say, I put it in the show notes and people can watch it. It's a funny idea, actually. It's really great. Yeah, no. So coming from you to the firm, what I mean, you say on the website, or I read it about the topic and the tool you have, humanized the internet. And you have an AI tool. That's for many people would be like, why? doing the opposite.
It's kind of a dichotomy. It doesn't really add up, right? AI, human, we sort of see them as two ends of the spectrum, not the same. So, it's a little bit of continuation of my journey. So AI was to me very fascinating. Back then, I didn't do a lot in AI till around 2012-13. So for 15 years, it was sort of a passive interest. Kept reading, learning, but not really. Then I started my first startup in 2011. And by 2013, we were into, you know, what would be technically called AI machine learning. So now when we were doing that, when I was doing that startup, one of the things that you could say started standing out was what can we learn about people on one side, and second, I see this as the biggest downside of technology in general and AI specifically, that technology tends to put distance between people often enough, and AI more so. Not always, like mobile phones we say has brought the world closer, but the fact that we can do this Zoom call means that we might not prefer to meet. I've had Zoom calls with people who are sitting up mile away, a kilometer away from me. And generally to social media, if you see, yeah, we are interacting, but are we really coming close? So that thought process, fact that we could learn about people, that led to what became Humantic AI eventually, from that first, you know, journey where we said, well, hold on, technology is going to keep putting distance between people. It tends to be robotic, right? That's the you know, downside of technology, and especially AI, as we all know, ChatGPT. We could make a ChatGPT response, you know. So we said, what if we could learn about people from all the data? There's a lot of data exhaust, right? It's just there. We could learn about people. If we knew what mattered to whom, couldn't we help the other party know and talk, you know, to that given person in a way that it becomes a more relevant conversation? It's probably a richer conversation. It's also more productive. And then, of course, that was a slightly wide statement. Then we zeroed down on a use case. Like, we serve sales teams now. And we chose sales because sales is inherently very transactional, right? I'm here to sell you something. Pay me money, I give you this thing. So we said, okay, what if we can help sellers know what really matters to the buyers? Their personality, their behavior, their fears, their drivers, their wants, motivations, everything. And that makes it a better conversation. It's richer. The buyer says, I like that. He seems to understand me, because that's how it feels when you connect with someone, when you understand what matters to them. And for a salesperson, yes, that too, but also you being more productive, right? You hitting your goals, etc. So that's how it came together, that if we could help people understand each other using AI, ironically enough, then in the age of AI, we could bring people a little bit closer. So start with sales, but beyond that, and that's where we talk about humanizing the internet. Yeah. So can we make people talk on internet the way they talk in real life, where they understand each other better, have more context? So, and we call that, that's where our name comes from, Humantic AI, right? So, you know, so humanizing AI, that's humanistic AI.
I really love the thought, because what I realized is that I sit then in Zoom meetings or something and I'm totally not having all the interactions. I just see the face of the person. I don't know how they move or whatever. And if I am able to create another source of, yeah, like level of connectivity there, that's really interesting. Huh? It's like, it's funny, yeah. Or if I teach, no, maybe not, sorry. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, no. Absolutely, 100%. That's the thought process. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see myself. I mean, this is the strangest thing. I look at you on the screen now and I have myself there. So I look, and I think many people don't look at the person they talk to. They look at themselves or whatever. So the point is really like, technology can give something back. I like it. Do you have a kind of case? Like, how would it work? I mean, how would a person start using Humantic?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, the easiest way is we have a browser extension. You just install it. For us, the input data at this point comes from LinkedIn profile of a person. So if someone's not on LinkedIn, we can't do much. We're expanding that. You know, that's the data catchment area, as we call it. So we're expanding that. For example, by the end of this year, this Zoom call will start feeding into our algorithms as an input, how you are, your body language, how you speak, everything, right? Again, same principle, keep reusing data. We don't want people to create more data. That's, in the digital age, that is that's the smoke, right? That is the waste. Like cars have smoke. So in the digital age, it's data. You know, that's the exhaust. So that'll start going in. So right now, yes, you have that. A LinkedIn profile goes in. In 10 seconds, you get a profile of a person. We can be off sometimes. We're around 85% accurate, but we are right 8 times, 9 times out of 10. Now, any meeting you're walking into, you know that person a lot better. You know, what matters to them, both good and bad. You know, sometimes, like I was talking to a user of ours, he said, "Hey man, I just spoke to two sharpshooters." Like there's an archetype we call sharpshooter. And sharpshooter is a hard buyer, right? They are cynical, they don't believe, they don't, you know, pull the punches, you know, now if you know mentally, right, going into a meeting, "Hey, I'm meeting a sharpshooter," you walk in prepared. You're not like, "Oh man, this is going to be a bad meeting." You're like, bring it on. I know exactly what you got. Versus same, you know, someone else who's very nice, polite, and where now you might have to step up and make them comfortable, right? And you could make it a richer interaction for both the parties if you use it right. Yeah. So that browser extension is the easiest way. We have a 7-day trial on our website. Anyone can go and try. And if it works, then of course, continue.
Do you plan to use like other tools? I mean, I went through my books and I found the sorry for the cover. It's a little, my child got it in the hands. I see. Yeah. Just that's better. Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah,
that is for everybody who's like listening for the podcast. This is a book about this is Surrounded by Idiots, and it's about those four archetypes that people are.
Yes.
And Amabrit also had it there, just standing there. And
yeah.
It's a basic idea that you have four different types of people, and if you know how to communicate with them, then everything. I mean, it's easier because you know how the others tick. And Do you take this as a base model, or do you use some parts of it, or?
Yeah, so it's the book also refers to a model called the DISC model, which is four types, as you said. DISC stands for, the listeners here, dominant, influential, steady, and calculative, or sometimes it's called conscientious. So those are the four, I would say, categories. So within that, then people can be combination of two, they can be just one, they could even be three in some extreme cases. So, and based on that, you could say, "Oh, this person falls here." Like we break it down into 36 types, but the four is a great starting point. That these are very task and result oriented. The I's are very story and relationship oriented. The S's are very process oriented and risk averse generally, and C is a very analytical and information oriented. So once you know this, Now you know what to focus on rather than just doing the usual that you do with everyone. Like I was on a call, I think just yesterday, and we start the call. There's like 80 people on the call. This is a publicly listed company. And one gentleman, he goes, "Hey, I was just talking to my wife and this is just so right about my wife." I said, "Well, I consider myself lucky because I never recommend using it in a personal context, because there we have a very different lens of how we see people, right? And we are a little bit focused towards helping understand sellers, you know, helping sellers understand their buyers. So we call it the buyer persona is what we try to do. Although the buyer persona is 80-90% same as, you know, what you are, but not 100%, right? You could be, like as a buyer, you could be very precise, whereas you could be like more jovial and easygoing in normal life. It can be a 20% difference. It should not be totally different, but there can be some difference, yeah.
Yeah, so those
four types self-category.
Yeah. You yourself have different types, yeah. But I mean, LinkedIn is a business network. So if you take the data from there, then it's basically the business personality that people want to be. Yeah? I mean, they wouldn't post stuff about their wives and their food on wife and their food. And
That's not so if
they don't want to be that type, I mean.
So that's actually not a big problem, because the models are trained to handle that. So in a way, like I would say, we don't look at the data. We don't look at what you are saying. We look through the data. We look at how you are saying. Like language is one part of the signal. Your background, etc. You know, there's two kinds of signals. And there's a lot of research. You know, sometimes it surprises people. For example, if I make it easy, what does it mean if someone uses a lot of exclamation marks? Right. That's an easy example. Mm-hmm. But just one thing. There's hundreds of such signals.
Yeah.
What if someone uses a lot of smileys? Well, that's one thing. But when you see it with hundreds more signals, you start developing a picture of how that individual might be.
That's great. Yeah, yeah. That tells you something about the person. Yeah, yeah. Too many exclamation marks are never good. Yeah.
Yes.
You should save that. Or the person is really in distress. No, but it's a type thing. You know then how to handle the person. Or if the person is really exact, never uses it. Emojis, yes, or whatever, then you know, okay, you have to focus on the numbers and you don't waste the time of the other person.
No, so that's what we tell customers too. You know, it's both the things. I was interviewing a candidate today. I don't know if she checked my humanity profile or she was just being herself. Now, she seemed like someone who's a, you know, go-getter. Like she used a few strong words here and there, which I love. I love, you know, I tend to use like, let's go kick ass. You know, I like saying that. And that's what people don't realize. When someone uses those kind of words with me, I'm like, I like this person, right? Yeah. It's natural.
Yeah.
Versus, imagine, now, incidentally, I am like that. So those words stayed with me. And that's how you connect better, remember better, as you said, even 3 years later.
Yeah.
But with someone else, it would be the opposite, right? And so, by default, it's a little bit of like, sometimes we get lucky, sometimes we don't, right? In sales, we say, yeah, you win some, you lose some. But can we improve our odds, right? By, you know, caring a little bit more for the, you know, the other party.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. There was probably something that was not as easy, or it sounds totally easy. Huh? It's like you go to the LinkedIn profile, pull the data, and then you have some results. What problems did you face actually developing a software that does that?
It's interesting. It's actually been a long journey, right? We all think some of these stories are, you know, or just quick, it just happened. Like someone might look at our story and say, oh, in 21, they started. 2022, they raised a few million dollars. By 24, you know, ABC. What became Humantic AI? We started working at the core of that in 2015 as part of my earlier startup. Mm. One of our, you know, product guys came across a white paper, a research paper, yeah, that spoke about how words can, you know, indicate personality. We were working with Twitter data mostly then, built like a basic model that evolved. At some point we said, hold on, we are using it for selling, hiring, etc. What if we could productize this? You know, then it became, okay, Twitter, well, not everyone's on Twitter. Let's do it for LinkedIn. Okay, how do we generate training data? How do we build the models? It was, so there's quite a bit, you know, that had to come together, and it took us some time. You know, people won't know because they haven't seen Humantic AI for too long.
Mm-hmm.
But before Humantic AI became Humantic AI, there were many years of hard work and research.
I remember that there was some research on it that people who use AI a lot in writing, they are most insecure. You would think they are more like for the like the strong ones, but quite the opposite. They have to reassure themselves. Yes. Yeah.
That's a yes. So that's called psycholinguistics, technically, where language indicates your personality attributes. And there's hundreds of such signals. Some are easy to understand, as you said, using I or using exclamation marks. Some are hard. You know, people who use more pronouns tend to be slightly less open. It's a thing, right, Idris? There's 30 years of research, dozens of research papers, thousands of citations, but we don't know. So we were able to take that. In that way, I say we stand on the shoulders of giants, like always. We didn't do the core research. We productized the core research, which is there. We productized that into a product.
Yeah. Oh, but there's like, oh God, Schumpeter here is to the entrepreneur and the innovator, I think. The entrepreneur, or the researcher. No, I don't get the terms. For the listeners, it's just not important. There's one guy who develops a theory and the other who makes something out of it. And there's two different traits of personality. Different things.
So combine both, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing. One thing I have to affirm that I come from this whole entrepreneurship and lean startup scene. What would you say is your unfair advantage? Where are you better than the company? What can't they copy?
So I think that's always a hard one. And I have a slightly generic answer before I give you a better answer. I've always believed that companies, differentiation, 90% is really between the founder's ears. Now, incidentally, I'm a single founder, so it probably seems a little cocky. But if I would say, let's say the core team, not say founders, let's say the core team's ears.
Mm-hmm.
So Elon Musk has open sourced all his patents. I doubt anyone will really catch up. They haven't for 5-7 years since you're right. Because by the time people get to, where you are, you will be, another 3 years ahead, another 5 years ahead. So that's a slightly generic answer in terms of, but there's a pace of innovation that's absolutely crazy, crazy right now. I think our advantage, which will be hard for many, I'm sure there'll be some, that will put up a good fight. And a good fight, I love a good, healthy, fight competition. One part, almost everyone's focused these days on, putting GenAI, ChatGPT, LLMs to use. They don't have core models. We have a core model, right? Personality AI, it's our own model. There's less than a dozen companies in the world with this model. IBM, by the way, has a personality AI model. I don't know, many people do not know. So, and a few startups and a couple of others. That's hard to replicate by itself. Even within that, personality is, it's a very... It's a very subjective concept. It's not maths. It's not 2 + 2 = 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
So creating, therefore, training data, like let us say if I was creating an algorithm, training data, right? Typically it's been humans in the loop. It's, things are changing now. If just I had to say, like, you're in marketing, so you understand sentiment analysis. Oh, this is positive. This is negative. You could just have 5,000 people sitting somewhere and look at a piece of text and say positive, negative, positive, negative. How will you say what someone's personality? You have to know them very, very deeply, right? You can't look at a picture and say their personality. So creating training data for something like that's very hard. And then, of course, comes down to, I think, details, how we combine personality and generative AI today. So... And the flavor that I call it the humantic flavor Gen AI, because it's not robotic anymore. It'll be with you. It might decide to write it in a witty and funny manner because it believes it knows that that is what is most likely to get a response. With me, it might say, I'm just going to be on the point, just 2-3 short sentences. That might be the way. So I think those 2-3 things, our own proprietary models, kind of algorithms where training data generation is extremely hard. And then how you combine it with the other AIs, it'll make it hard. It's doable, but it'll be very hard if you will be able to do it that well.
Well, I like the answer. Long ago, I was in entrepreneurship, and there was a research study that venture capitalists invest in the people and not in the idea. That was the first thing you said, that it's basically your core team. And if you have a good core team, you have your personality AI. So you have a thing you produce with the core AI team or with your whole team. And those are, if you have enough people, and that's a problem today, you might can produce something like that. But both together, it's really hard. I see. Yeah, it's like...
People are the key. And see, we are in the innovation business. One of our new product managers, he's new. He's a great guy. He joined and he's like, don't you think you pay a little too well? This is a real conversation. There's only one product manager if you go to LinkedIn. I said, well, if you mind, I'll reduce your salary. He's like, no, that's not what I mean. And I was telling him, I said, for companies like ours, the success comes from innovation, not from efficiency, at least not at a small scale. Hence, we try to do what we can, not just salary is one part, but also in terms of culture, and the way of life. Quick, I'll add a data point here about us. So we recently, AngelList Quant Fund invested in us. And they reached out to us because on the AngelList hiring platform, we became what they call, a top 15 company with the highest, it says, talent velocity. Like, essentially, we were attracting the best talent on AngelList. Mm-hmm. The ambitious ones, the ones who want to do something big, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what made them reach out to us. And we thought, okay, that was a good signal to send out to potential, teammates. So my point is, yes, 90%, it's all about people. We try to do what it takes to bring the best, best on board, and then let them just do their thing.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that sounds, it's like textbook. I like it. I totally love it. Yeah, those things, yeah. Is my philosophy as well. So great. Yeah. Coming to a more general thing, like business AI, you basically are in the area of business AI. What do you think? If I come from a firm and say, should I not buy an AI service, use some AI? What do you say? I mean, we talked about the numbers. It's kind of, it's like the question is, it seems to be a little obsolete, but it's more like, is there something in AI that makes you really qualitative so much better?
I don't like to push ourselves, down people's throat in that sense. I would first say, should you use AI? Absolutely. You should use some AI, whether it's semantic AI, whether it's deumantic AI, doesn't matter. Whatever you think is good for you, you should try using. If you're a big company, it's probably not a bad idea to move slowly, and most big companies do because things are still getting figured out. Yeah. If you are an individual, then, you don't have that much risk. So you should use, my suggestion would be to use AI where ease of use is high, because that reduces the barrier to adoption. Now you see more success with one AI, odds are you'll succeed more with the second and more with the third. And overall, you'll be more successful. So now we are a very easy to use. Again, I think data wise, we were number two on ease of use, and number three on results. Overall, we were number three for 2023 on G2. We are a good choice, but you should see what are your bigger problems, right? That I would start there. AI is just a way to solve problems. Roughly, there's enough information. Information is not a problem, good AIs, tools, options. Shortlisting actually is. Start from your problem. See what will move the needle. Don't, wait too much to test the waters. Go in, try to find something that's easy to adopt. Get to a certain level of success. Don't give up too easily. There's always a little bit of a learning curve. Many people, stop too quickly. If you believe, just give it, some time. Once you become successful with one, adopting the second one will be much, much easier. You'll have just so much more belief and conviction. So, start with the problems. Go for ease of use. Of course, something that's affordable, in case you're a smaller business, etc. And stay at it, you know, for at least a few months, see some results, and the rest of your AI adoption journey will become very, very easy and doable.
That's good. It's a just do it thing, no? That don't wait, just do it and test. And yeah, that's, and also, I mean, you said it's easy to use your tool. I just think I'm to mind as you use public data like from LinkedIn. I'm here in Europe and this GDPR and whatever, and then there are some cases of court, they sue, where comes the data from, YouTube and whatever. But your data is basically like from public sources that you're allowed to use, or that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So our data, so that's a great question. I think, you know, definitely in Europe, even otherwise, first of all, our data is not private. So it's personal. It's not private. Those are two different things. People often confuse them up. So it's not sensitive data for that matter. When it comes to GDPR, of course, one is morally doing the right thing, which we make sure we do, right? But that's a little subjective. Second is legally. So we are GDPR compliant. In fact, right now, we're working through a formal, you know, certification, you know, through a third-party auditor. Because generally GDPR, you could be compliant and do a self-declaration saying, we have looked at the provisions, we have handled everything. If you go to our website, you'll find our GDPR stance at humantic.ai/GDPR. It'll tell you what's our GDPR stance on data, policies, everything. But because we increasingly, we work with, you know, larger companies increasingly more and more, and they are global in nature, while most of our business is in North America, but they're global. Hence, we try to stay ahead of, you know, where we should be. As a young company, compliance, we spend a lot of time, you know, whether it's security side, SOC 2, et cetera, GDPR, then we have CCPA coming up. So still got work to do, but it's something that you can use. GDPR, we are compliant. On our website, you'll find our GDPR stats.
Oh, that's good. No, but this is like this question kind of always comes. And
it always comes. It always comes. And I think it's a genuine question. I do think, you know, European systems made it a little bit hard, you know, especially for younger companies, because there's just so much process around it. I get the intent behind it. So hence we are like, okay, well, it's a good intent. You know, it is something that protects, you know, the consumers and people. I am a founder, but I do think that a majority of companies, unfortunately, tend to put money before, you know, before other, you know, responsibilities. So we need some safeguards in place. Not everyone thinks of, you know, what is right. So people think of what is beneficial before they think of what is right, which I think is part of the problem.
No, that's good. That's a really good thing. And that leads to dangers. I have a last funny question. How do you think a Terminator scenario is it real? What do you think about that?
So never say never. That's my belief in general. I think anyone who's truly scientific will always talk in probabilities and not in absolutes. I think foolish people talk in absolutes. Someone says this will happen, or someone says this will never happen, is essentially foolish, right? I would make that statement. Wise people talk in probabilities, right? I think the probability of a scenario like that, and I'm hoping to be, you know, a wise one here. I think the probability of something like that is extremely, extremely, extremely low. I think there's still, it feels like in 2015, 16, it felt like self-driving cars are here, and in 2 years, no one would be driving anymore. 10 years later, we're still experimenting around. And so similarly with AI, AGI, it feels like it's almost here. I'll give you today's example again, right? It's just so much. There were two companies. I wanted to see if they are competitors. So I said, okay, well, let me go to ChatGPT. That's easy. Rather than trying to research, I said, hey, are A and B competitors? You know, first I, incidentally, GPT 3.5 was selected. Yeah, that's the earlier model for those who don't know, slightly less intelligent. It gave me a really bad answer. It said A and B may be competitors because it picked up, you know, whatever from their website, the areas they work in. They work in cloud, they work in ABC, they may be competitors. That's not what even an average analyst would tell me. If they tell me they may be competitors, I'll say, hey, bugger off, you know, I need to know whether they are or not, right? Well, what are you saying? Then I moved to GPT-4. Well, GPT-4 was better. So it said, yes, they are competitors. And because they work in these areas and they are very overlapping areas. Well, technology is a wide, there were technology companies in cloud and whatnot. It's a wide space. Yeah, doesn't mean you would be competitors. So, I tried to ask it. I said, why do you say it's competitors? So that's one thing you can do, right? It'll explain its reasoning. And it told me that they're in the same areas, which, yeah, well, okay, useful, but not really fully. Now I just went to Google. I typed the names of both the companies and I said, ABC competitors. The third link was a press release of an event where the leaders from both the companies were on stage. It was called Channel Data Watch, you know, because they are in the, you know, something like that. You know, one company's, North America managing director, one company's CEO. Now, if those two leaders are speaking at the same conference on the same topic, odds are that they compete, you know, significantly enough. My point is GPT-4 was not able to make use of, like, I would have liked to see that in the why, saying, I also saw that their leaders were speaking, you know, and I'm sure there'll be more. I'm talking about 2 minutes of research. My point is, this is a very basic question, right? We still have a long way to go. There's a lot that needs to happen. So I don't think, back to your question, a scenario like that is likely, highly unlikely. And even if likely, it's not anytime soon. We've got a long distance to go.
Okay, good. So that's at least, I like this with probabilities, never say absolute, but yeah, okay, you believe that.
Absolute stuff of foods, yeah, absolute stuff of foods.
Great, great. Yeah, thank you for being on the podcast. In old times, I would have said, where can people follow you on Twitter or so, but those times are over.
I'm still old fashioned. I am on Twitter.
You are?
I'm a Preet Kalkat in the world, so... I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, actively, absolutely, both the places, please feel free to reach out, follow.
And the website is Humantic AI. And
Humantic.ai, yes.
And they get a 7 days test.
Absolutely.
Framework. So that's great. Yeah, cool. So thank you for being here. And yeah, I wish you all the best and much success. And I think I'm quite sure we'll hear a lot from you and Humantic AI. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dagmar. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, for bringing up some great memories as well as, some useful, insightful questions.
Great. So for all the listeners, this is the new interview series. I'll come back with other interesting people as hopefully as interesting and as good in explaining stuff as Amarpreet.
Thank you, Dietmar, for that insightful interview with Amarpreet. Here at the Beginner's Guide to AI, we're always exploring new frontiers. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated, and we look forward to having you with us in the next episode.